There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go.
I'll be joined by Steve Paul, my co-host. Nasser Hanib will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 427, May 20th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/F1Weekly or click on the link on our homepage. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod, iPhone, or MP3 player. Listen to one you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, is Renault the engine du jour? Toyota says F1 out of touch with fans. And on this program, special interview with GP3 race winner Alexander Rossi, and of course, Motorsports Mondial with the Karachi Kid himself, Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers, and yourself?
Absolutely outstanding. Finally got over the Monaco thing. Still a great race. Renault podium. I was pretty happy all weekend.
Yeah, it was a fun race to watch. You know, in the weather in Monaco this weekend was just phenomenal. And then a little bit of intrigue in the race, and then, you know, got to leave it to Michael to throw a wrench in there just to kind of make Monaco that much more interesting.
Well, you know what? I thought it was just color added at the end. And you know what? Michael did the move, and Stirling Moss came out yesterday saying he would have done the same thing. A lot of people have been on Michael's side.
Yeah, well, ultimately, the problem Michael's got is that it's against the rules. And
yeah, but in the end, he gave it his best shot, and you know what? I give him kudos for that.
Yeah.
If you don't try, it's not like he's, you know, leading the championship, and okay, so he lost some points, finished 12th. Que sera, sera.
Exactly, and, you know, it was an opportunity to possibly take 2 points away from Fernando Alonso, who's ahead of him in the championship. You got to give him credit for at least being a little bit aggressive and thinking, being a thinking man's driver to make that move. I'm just surprised he didn't know about the particular rule.
You know,
Rossi.
See, the problem is, if he had made the move on Felipe Massa, it would have worked.
Would anybody have noticed?
Nobody. But, you know, that's just the way it is. Like when Fernando made the move on Felipe going into the pit lane. I mean, that's just the way it is. Number one, number two.
Yeah.
But see, Michael made a mistake by doing it on Fernando El Hombre. So
the muy macho driver.
Exactly. So a pretty exciting race. I mean, there are a few moments where it does get a little sleepy. But I find I capitalize on those moments to go and cook up maybe some stuffed mushrooms or something.
Or pop the cork on another bottle of champagne.
Exactly. Veuve Clicquot flowing out the gates of hell. Good news for my favorite team, Renault engine program. Remy Taffin says the company is ready to expand its customer supply to additional teams. You get a Renault podium, and all of a sudden, the marketing program kicks in. Bam!
Let me see, any of you guys using Cosworth Automotive that you could win a race with? Or maybe one of you Ferrari customers?
Everybody, when you have top drivers like Mark Webber, who is now Mr. Machismo, you know, Sebastian Vettel, people like that talking about the drivability of the Renault, not necessarily higher in horsepower, but the drivability, the rev curves.
Yeah, power bands and all that good stuff that are important in a Formula One car. Apparently, right now, Renault's really got it dialed in on the button. You know, we saw Ferrari make a couple tweaks to the motor to improve reliability. And we know that there's been some development going on with these motors within the rules. Some of it is actually helping performance. Some of it doesn't necessarily. But it's interesting to see Renault step up and go, hey, anybody else need motors?
Well, apparently people are raising their hand, including Lotus and Williams.
Huh, interesting.
Exactly.
It would be interesting to see Frank go back to Renault Motors.
Well, we talked about
I'm actually really thinking that, you know, if there's a team that really needs to get a power plant that they can trust, it would be Sauber.
Well, Sauber.
But then I have a thing about, you know, Ferrari Customer Motors. So.
I know you do. But Ferrari Customer Motors, I mean, Toro Rosso hasn't had too many problems, and, you know, like you said, nobody's ever won buying Ferrari Motors. But that's just the way the brakes go, you know.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the teams that are buying Ferrari Motors typically aren't teams that are going to be in the mix. Didn't Sebastian Vettel actually win a race in a Ferrari motor in Monza?
Yes, he did. And it was exciting. The Tifosi was happy, and the German Tifosi were happy as well. That was a great moment, too.
That was really his coming out party.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that was exciting. And like I said, you're right. Thank you, Stephen. Ferrari engines
have won a race for a customer team, but they've never won a championship.
Keep up the good work, Stephen. But no, I'm happy for Renault. They also say that we don't know which teams will be supplying next year's. They don't know which teams they may be supplying next year, but they've got the capacity to supply more than two teams. We've been doing this for years. It's not a big problem for us. So,
well, it's got to be they've got to have a reasonably large foundry in the fact that they build all the motors for the GP2 cars.
Yes.
As well as the cars. So there's capacity there that I'm sure that goes unused.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens with that. Interesting news from Toyota. And, you know, I don't know why they do this. They go, you know, through hell to come into Formula One. And they did. And it was a lot of hoopla. And they spent billions and billions of ducats to be in Formula One. Now they pull out of Formula One. And they're saying that Formula One is just not in touch with the little people.
What does that have to do with the fact that they pulled... Again, that's kind of like making excuses for pulling out when the real reason was is that you knew you were going to take a major financial hit for not stepping up to the plate with some of the problems you were having with your cars, and you needed to find, you know, $500 million to put back in your budget.
Yeah, I mean, they're calling F1, you know, elitists. And to be honest with you, I'm a little person, you know. I mean, I love Formula One because I like to look at the glam and hope maybe one day I could be part of that glam and be part of it. It's part of the fantasy. It's entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but it is the pinnacle of motorsports, which means that you have the best drivers, you have the best equipment. Of course it's going to be a bit elitist because it's the pinnacle.
Exactly, and you got the best grid girls. I mean, I love this stuff.
And frankly, Toyota could come out and say that if they'd actually won a championship and walked away.
Yeah, I love this quote. For the fortunate few who can afford to wander around the F1 paddock, that is, it's fine. But the average fan has no hope. I think the best kind of races are those in which people can get close to the race. NASCAR. So, Steven, did you see the pictures of the new NASCAR Hall of Fame?
Is it built like a giant NASCAR?
You know, it should. But actually, from the outside, it's very beautiful.
I think I've actually seen a photo of it. It's a very nice building.
It's cool. It's glorious. It looks... I mean, it's very, very impressive. I'm to be honest with you, I'm actually stunned on how nice the outside looks. Very sophisticated architecture. The design is gorgeous. The display of the cars is just phenomenal. I mean, it could be the Formula One Hall of Fame because it's such a nice building. So, don't know what's going on there, but I'm sure one day Nasser will be looking at car number 43.
Yeah, I'm sure that a lot of that has to do with the fact that NASCAR knows that once they build it, they will come. And making it as pleasant and inviting as possible makes a big difference because one of the things that does is you get return visitors.
Absolutely, and I think it's going to be very successful for the United States, and especially for Europeans who come out, who are Le NASCAR fans will have a great facility to go to and pay their respects to whoever their famous favorite driver is, from, you know, Richard Petty to Cale Yarborough. So very, very cool. Very, I thought it was a good thing.
I bet within 15 years there's an amusement park next door.
Very possible. But I thought it was pretty cool. Okay, also in the, you know, all the talk about, you know, Jensen Button's Kablammo and the mechanic that now has been traumatized for leaving that cover in one of the cooling ducts, the side pods.
It's a lot easier to get away with than white powder.
Well, 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 Steve, I don't know what you're insinuating.
Was it at Monaco where the white powder showed up last night?
It could have been. But anyway, apparently, yes, they're not going to divulge this guy's name, and I hope they don't. I mean, it's an honest mistake. But really,
an honest mistake. I'm sure that as the point came in his day when he was supposed to reach over there and pull that out, Jennifer Lopez walked by.
And I saw Jennifer Lopez, and you know what? There's just no
complete.
Yes, you drop everything.
Exactly. The brain just completely goes.
Literally everything.
Yes.
So, no, Jennifer looked really terrific cruising the streets of Monte Carlo. So, but still, they should obviously paint those red, like on aircraft, you have, you know, hanging red flags.
Exactly.
Streamers, you know, where it's obvious to anybody.
Ultimately, in a situation like that, that's almost one of those points where you're looking to one of your teammates to pick you up and go, pick that up, get that off of there, you know?
Yeah. So, but apparently, I'm sure he'll go through some therapy.
And again, it not only falls on the mechanic that left it on, but where's the chief mechanic? Isn't that the last thing he's supposed to do before he walks away from the car, is make sure that they've removed all the pins and needles to make sure that thing works?
Exactly. So it was pretty interesting, but it certainly did cook that thing, didn't it?
It's amazing how fast it fried it, that he really couldn't even get an entire lap on it without... Well, you got to figure there's two things that happen. One is he goes out on the reconnaissance lap, and then he sits in the grid waiting for the start, and then basically ended up with, you know, almost instantly onto the into behind the safety car, and just no chance to really get back into the pits.
Yeah,
I'm really surprised they didn't. Well, that engine was probably toast before he even got back to the start finish line after the start.
Yes, I'm sure. Let's move on quickly to Felipe Massa. Started fourth, finished fourth. He had a good race. I mean, when you're in the top five, there's not going to be a lot of passing.
No, especially in Monaco. You know, this is, again, a track very similar in some respects to the Spanish Grand Prix at Barcelona, in that, you know, hey, if you start in the top three, you're probably going to finish in the top three, and more than likely in the same order.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I hate to say this, and, you know, I'm no Felipe fan, and I knocked him on the last podcast for not actually trying to do something exciting in Monaco, but still, of course, Ferrari always announces their following season driver lineup at Monza. Felipe has not been re-signed. We have the Kubica whirlwind going on now. Mark Webber.
Sebastian Vettel, basically Red Bull came out this week and said, well, why should we be in a hurry?
Exactly.
Because if anything, they should be in a hurry to sign him now, because I have a feeling they're going to be having to pay him more if they wait to the end of the season.
Yeah, of course, Sebastian Vettel earlier in the week saying that, you know, he has secret fantasies about driving a Ferrari, as all drivers do.
Any kid that grew up in Europe watching Formula One, and even in America, ultimately, you know, American kids watch Mario Andretti race at Ferrari. So they're, you know, anybody who's a true racer, ultimately, that's kind of the holy grail, is to drive for Ferrari.
Right. So Felipe's going to have to do something exciting. Now, he does pretty well in Turkey. He's had some good luck there.
He's had a lot of good luck in Turkey.
So we've got Turkey coming up. Let's see if Felipe could pull something out of a hat, because not only does he have to out-qualify, out-drive Fernando Alonso, but he's really got to do something special to convince Luca di Montezemolo that he doesn't need to be looking at a Sebastian Vettel or a Robert Kubica.
Yeah, I don't really think Mark Webber's a driver that's in the running for that slot. I suppose if he becomes world champion, maybe. But I would tend to think that Luca would be looking for a younger driver to some, you know, kind of more of a long-term fix.
Yeah, but I hate to say it, Luca just wants to win.
Right, and I think you're better off with two young drivers who are showing exceptional talent than you would be with a Mark Webber, who's really 3-4 years maybe, unless he pulls a Rubens Barrichello and hangs on for another
steering wheel.
Has another 15 years.
Well, I don't know about that.
Did you read his excuse for that?
That was bogus. That was crap.
Yeah.
That was stinko.
It's like going, I was afraid for my life.
You know, and I read that, but he was just trying to avoid a spanking from Frank. But even Frank Williams came out praising Mark Webber for doing such a phenomenal job. Frank having written off Mark Webber as perhaps maybe being over the hill and Kaputne. But some of these older drivers, if you could prove yourself, and the reverse cage rattling is the best way to do it.
Exactly. The other thing, too, is that, you know, Formula One, you know, driver gets to 30, you know, up until, you know, it's pretty much, oh, he's over the hill, he's past his prime. But, you know, the way these guys keep themselves in condition now, it frankly, I think you almost might be, the only thing you may lose is just microscopic fractions of reaction time. But they're going to make up for that with the experience by not getting into those positions where they need that tiny fraction.
And Mark Webber, obviously a huge fitness nut.
Oh, yeah.
Hanging around with the likes of Lance Armstrong. Yes, I mean, he is one of the most fittest guys on the grid, including Schumacher. So, not surprising, but I'm glad for Mark Webber. Some great Australian history was happening, which Nasser will fill us in, of course, the second part of the show with Motorsports Mondial. But great, great stuff. Also, Force India getting points in Monaco. Vijay Mallya head over heels, both cars in the points. Pretty exciting stuff.
Vijay's another guy that's going, I'm glad Kimi was out on his yacht.
Yeah, pretty much. pretty much.
But just a really good race by those guys to stay out of trouble and to bring the cars home in points-paying positions.
And Nico Hülkenberg, I'm sure Willie Webber probably went to him and said, well, what's the matter, you? Hey.
Keep it on the track.
Yeah, no, bad day for Williams. Of course, the Rubinho thing, but... Nico Hülkenberg, once again, we've got some reverse cage rattling. You know, Nasser and I expected this guy to really shine, has won every championship that he's entered. And so far, you know, I mean, we're not sure what's going on here, but he could, I mean, is this going to be another Romain Grosjean?
Yeah, and or one of the, you know, dozens and dozens of other drivers who had stellar careers until they got to Formula One. Yeah, I've been really surprised. I expected once we got to Europe that he would kind of maybe step a little bit to the fore because he was getting on tracks that he'd been at before. And so far, you know, I think he almost needs to take a half a step back and just rein it in and not push quite so hard at the moment until he's understanding the car underneath him. Because
I agree.
That seems to be what I'm seeing is that he's pushing it out on the edge, which is all fun and great until it's off.
I think once again we have the classic trying too hard scenario where he should just go in, learn from Rubinho, and just get immersed into the Formula One thing for a year. Then the following year, when you have the confidence, the ability, where you really know the car, the team, the engineers, then you can push it up a couple of notches and hit the edge of the envelope.
Exactly. You know, you can kind of push at certain times, but frankly, I think the biggest thing for the majority of young drivers coming into Formula One, it makes so much more sense if you can stay on the track because those are laps that you're getting. You know, take it out near the edge, but don't get too close to it.
Yeah, so, yeah, very disappointing season so far for Nico Hülkenberg. I'm sure he's getting talked to by the team, maybe by his manager.
He's probably getting text messages from Willie Webber like nobody's business.
Well, Willie Webber's handled... the top of the top, so I'm sure he's handling it well, because you certainly don't want to scar the young man.
That's the other issue that you see a lot with rookies is that they – well, I actually think we may be seeing it with Nico a little bit. He's kind of lost his mojo. He's not as confident as he might be because he's been having these little offs that are basically ending his day. If you're not in the race, you're not learning, which is yet another problem, I think, for a lot of rookies.
I agree. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And just a reminder, we have the interview with the Barcelona GP3 race winner. Of course, this is more of a conversation with Nasser Hamid and, of course, Alexander Rossi. So we'll be back after this brief message. This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. I personally recommend House Rules by Jody P. Colt, The Big Short by Michael Lewis, or The Help by Catherine Stockett. To download your free audiobook today, go to audiblepodcast.com/F1Weekly. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/F1Weekly for your free audiobook. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, Nasser Hamid.
Yet the Monaco Grand Prix would yield a very different result. Other circuits may have changed over the years, but Monaco's topography remains virtually unchanged since the first race was held through the streets of this millionaire's playground in 1929. In 1970, Stewart led the opening phase, but Brabham eventually squeezed ahead and seemed on course for another decisive victory with a sleek Brabham BT33. Amazingly, the canny veteran was wrong-footed when he came up to lap a slower car and slid into the barriers on the final corner of the race. This allowed Austrian star Jochen Rindt's elderly Lotus 49C to slip through and take an unexpected win.
Greetings and great moment from Monaco Grand Prix regards. That was the 1970 race in the streets of Monte Carlo, where a small mistake by Jack Brabham on the final corner of the final lap allowed Jochen Rindt to take a surprise win. Later in the program, we will look at some other great and not-so-great moments in Monaco. Did you enjoy the race, sir?
Absolutely. I enjoy every race at Monaco. It's something special. There's pizzazz, caviar, champagne.
BBC coverage?
No, totally.
How about you, Mr. Oppenwein?
Wonderful race.
Really? Enjoyed it? Good. Back to the future, to Sunday's race. Mark Webber's pole position was the first for an Australian driver since 1967. Some of it is already news to some of our listeners, when Mr. Brabham started from pole in his own machine. Very impressive, as always. And Webber's dominating and reverse cage rattling victory is the first for an Australian driver since Brabham scored his very first F1 win in the same place way back in 1959, which is also the year of my birth.
That's so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it's touching. And he was driving a green Cooper. Actually, this photo of him winning there was used in my very first calendar, because the first calendar was called Motorsport Memories Maiden Wins.
And I have a copy of that.
Yeah, you do. Thank you, sir. And I really appreciate you paying full retail price plus tax.
Exactly.
Yes. All six races so far this season have been a Red Bull. We have seen a Red Bull on pole. Webber is joint leader in the championship with teammate Sebastian Vettel, courtesy of two back-to-back wins. You know, this really goes to show, even if your teammate has all the hoopla, which Vettel has, and also in the case of Hamilton, if you keep your nose to the grindstone and just keep working, it is possible for a good driver to win a world championship over a great driver.
Absolutely. It's a mental challenge, but Webber's stepped up to the plate.
No question about it. Button's hopes for a repeat win were cooked due to a human error, and Robert Kubica put in a sizzling performance to come third in his Lada-sponsored Renault.
I'm glad you didn't say Lada-powered Renault.
No, I know that.
Yes. You never know.
Yeah.
You know, Freudian slips and
stuff. Or in like the Ferrari powered BMW Sauber.
Thank you.
Felipe Massa came in fourth for Ferrari, and questions are already being asked if he will make room at the end of the season for Kubica or Webber. Looks like Felipe Baby is on the BB King program with Ferrari. The thrill is gone. Do you think he'll be at Ferrari next year?
I don't think so. I mean, we know Luca. All he wants to do is win.
Yeah. And Ferrari, as you know, normally announced their driver lineup at Monza, so it will not be a surprise if Massa is saying in September to Signor Montezemolo, "Baby, you've done me wrong, and all I can do now is wish you well."
Exactly.
You know, maybe he should start calling his Ferrari instead of Luscious Liz, Lucille.
Probably.
Fifth was the second victim of cage rattling so far this season, Lewis Hamilton. But once he has the package to challenge Red Bull, Hamilton will be McLaren's energy station. And you know, he was able to haul his car from last season to two wins. So I'm very confident that he will win a few races.
Very possible.
Yeah. And you know, all this cage rattling between the Red Bull team, it just might play in the hands of Nando. I still think he has as good a chance to become the champion this
absolutely
year.
He's only in third place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. He's had some bad luck, but I think the important thing is he's having the bad luck.
Bad luck and bad love.
At the beginning of the season. And instead of at the end of the season. And I think this is... We'll see what happens, but you never know.
It's a long season.
It's Formula One.
Yeah, it's a long season. A sixth on the track was Michael Schumacher. Last time he raced in Monaco, he had parking issues. This time it was a passing issue. Rules, as posted on the forum, state in plain simple English, no overtaking. But the lawyers were very busy, as Mr. Paul Newman once said. Lawyers have to eat also. I guess the racer in Schumacher came out even in the closing stages of the final lap, and that's what makes Michael Schumacher. He's going to look for any opportunity. Stewart's 20 seconds penalty handed the sixth spot to Nando, and you may ask yourself, how did he end up back in the pack at the start of the race? Will you please explain, host with the most?
Well, this is very interesting. I got an email from one of our listeners in Spain, in España, and he sent me a link on a Spanish website. It's actually YoSoyF1.com, which is a very interesting website. It's all in Spanish, but there's some rumors going around in the press in Spain that there was a mechanical problem with the Ferrari, but Nando didn't want to bring it up and bring it into the press, and it was suppressed.
No, we're talking about not during the race, in the practice, senor.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
YoSoyAccidente.com.
Yes, but well, the accident may have been by a mechanical problem. That's what's going on in Spain, in the press. I'm just telling you what's going on, the emails I get. And we're going to look further into this. I'm going to send you the link.
Did you get any text on this?
I did get some text.
Ah.
And not from Pedro de la Rosa this time.
Yes. Well, the mistake in practice may be as costly as the mistake in the rain in Japan, 2007. Self-inflicted injury.
Anyway,
it's a long season.
I'm a Renault fan, Nasser. You're barking up the wrong tree. Me and Robert.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's Polish sausages in the morning.
Yes.
Eggs in the afternoon.
And pierogies in the evening.
You betcha.
Okay, sir. Both Force India cars finish in the points, causing an overflow of Darjeeling tea on board Empress of India, which is Vijay Mallya's palatial palace in the Monte Carlo harbor.
And I heard the party on that palace was a rockin'
night. Well, that's where Bernie goes. Apparently, it's pretty awesome.
They even had the sign up that said, "If the boat's a rockin', don't bother knocking."
Oh wow!
Yeah, it's a very sophisticated crowd.
See, who was in the deck below? Max. Reserved for Max.
I'm not going there.
Okay, in some other news from the world of motor racing, rumors are already circulating that Lotus may not be powered by Cosworth next season. Renault have already stated they are willing to supply a third team, so let's see what happens.
It's good heritage there.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, man, Kubica is really showing what he's worth, so I will not be surprised if he ends up at Ferrari.
I hope not. I hope that Renault is going to muster up some millions. I know Carlos Ghosn is not going to like it, but it doesn't matter anymore because the Gengi capitalists, or however you pronounce it, are putting together a little package for Robert, hoping he will stay.
A pierogi package?
Exactly.
Cool.
I'm sure it includes pierogies.
Yeah, okay. Nico Hülkenberg, a cage rattler and GP2 champion in his rookie year, is finding F1 a tough nut to crack, just like Romain Grosjean and Nelsinho before.
Nelsinho who?
Nelsinho Piquet Jr.
Ooh.
Yeah. He used to drive for Renault. He finished second once in a race for Renault. You must like him.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at these guys, Nico Hülkenberg, Romain Grosjean, these are very good drivers and they're struggling. Nobody is expecting the Williams to win the race. But when you compare their rookie season with Hamilton's rookie season, it really shows.
More battles.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, I think some of these young drivers are trying a little bit too hard.
Yeah.
You know, the way Fernando Alonso started with Minardi, impressing, but not, well, you had a car that couldn't, you know, try too hard. But still, I think they're trying too hard. I think they should be reined back a little bit and learn the system.
Yeah, that's what I always preach, you know, learn the system. In the system.
Exactly, and these guys are... it's not just the driver, it's the system that's pressuring them to perform immediately out of the box.
Well, that's how it is, but I understand a lot of time it's money situation that, you know, that people only have X number of dollars and they want to stretch it, but, you know, cream always comes to the top. And, okay, in other racing action from the streets of Monte Carlo, Mexican Sergio Perez won the GP2 feature race. The sprint race was won by Belgian driver Jerome Di Ambrosio. And I was reading that this was his first win in 3 years of GP2 racing. And he's also part of the Jenny Capital / Renault, you know, consortium. So let's see what happens. Pretty decent driver, though. World Series by Renault race was won by Daniel Ricciardo. This Red Bull driver from Perth in Western Australia is going places. Last year he won the British F3 Championship. American Alexander Rossi from Northern California made an impressive World Series by Renault debut and was battling for top five finish when he said, "Hello Walls," at three laps from the end.
That's one of my favorite songs.
Every song is your favorite song. Well, I like that.
Yeah, but "Hello Wall" is just a classic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, on a personal note, I got yesterday, you remember Philippe Streff? Okay. I got a friend request from him on Facebook. I was touched. I don't know how he got to know me.
Well, you are becoming a star in your
own
mind,
really? In my own mind? A fading star.
The mirror never lies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially the deep dish mirror. And, you know, I remember him very well. So I sent him a nice email from his days, racing days in the unfortunate accident he had many years ago. And next time I'm in Viva la France, I will try to, you know, make contact and meet him also. And some sad news from the world of motorsports. Loris Cassel, ex-Grand Prix driver from Switzerland, passed away last weekend at the age of 60. He had been suffering from leukemia, and he also was running a team, Cassel Racing, in FIA GT Championship. We move on to Australian V8 from Winton Motor Raceway. Three in a row for James Courtney as he wins race one last weekend. You know, James Courtney, when he was in karting, a friend of mine from Australia was visiting here, and he brought up this name. He said, keep an eye on this name, James Courtney. And here he raced in Europe also, but now he's doing pretty well in the Australian V8 series. Craig Lowndes was second and Jamie Vincup third. Top two were the same in second race of the weekend, Courtney in a Ford Falcon over the Holden Commodore of Mr. Craig Lowndes. Formula BMW Asia, also known as Asia. From Sepang Grand Prix Circuit, Malaysia, there were four races in the Formula BMW Asia Series and all were won by Euro International drivers. And Euro International is owned by Mr. Antonio Ferrari, who at one time had a team in IndyCar Racing also. Two races were won by the Russian driver, Daniil Kvyat, and if I'm screwing up the name, apologies. And two were won by Carlos Sainz Jr., of Viva España, so good for him. Both of them were scoring their maiden win, so good for them. And California kid from Laguna Beach, Mr. Michael Lewis, was on the podium in all four races, and we have an interview with him coming soon, which was recorded in Barcelona. Nice, very friendly. You know, he was the first driver I ever interviewed. I asked him, where are you based in Europe? He said, and he's all excited. He says, I'm near Lake Como in Italy, and you're welcome to come and stay with me if you want. I said, oh, dude, check it out, man. I'm coming over in September. And he also gave a very nice plug for F1 Weekly. You'll be delighted.
Totally.
I think he needs to be sent a check of like 1 million lira.
I'll take care of it.
Thank you.
First thing in the morning.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Indy 500, our longtime listener from beautiful Luling, Louisiana, Christopher D. Hardy, he's on it. We wish him and all the F1 Weekly Familia members who are in Indy all the best and look forward to some photographs and some tidbits or some, you know, scuttlebuttle or whatever they can send from there. Not surprisingly, Penske and Ganassi drivers have been quick in the opening days of practice at the Brickyard, and Mr. Elio Castroneves may ride into history if he wins again. He will join Foyt, Mears, and Alonso Sr. as a four-time winner, which will be very, very impressive. From Brickyard to Baltimore, Indy cars will race in streets of Baltimore next year on a 2.4 mile, not million.
Yeah, it's probably going to cost about 2.4 million to set it up.
Yeah.
Or mille.
Yeah. On a 2.4 mile layout around Inner Harbor and Camden Yards area. Have you ever been to Baltimore?
No,
I haven't. You know, my sister lives near, in not too far from there, but I've been to Baltimore, this Inner Harbor area. Very, very nice. And, you know, I have nephews back east, so I'm really looking forward to this race. And it's a road race, not a roundy round, so I'm excited more than normal. NASCAR news. Tuesday of this week saw the official opening of the $195 million NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina. And if you are in the area, please check it out. Quite a bit of history there. From Richard Petty's number 43, 1974 Dodge Charger, one of my favorite cars, especially the hatchback, to Junior Johnson's 1944. So when is your trip to Charlotte, North Carolina?
Well, you know, this building is very impressive, as I was saying earlier in the podcast. For a NASCAR Hall of Fame, the architecture, the design is absolutely outstanding. This is a beautiful Hall of Fame, and I would not be embarrassed at all to tell people that, yes, I have gone to the Hall of Fame.
I know, it has very rich history and a lot of, you know, drivers.
Absolutely,
you know.
And I was watching some of the ceremonies on television. Of course, it's opening, I think, is this weekend.
I guess.
And they showed number 43.
Yeah.
Well, there's like 16 number 43s there.
Yeah. Synonymous with NASCAR racing.
And the hot dogs are free on opening day, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. What about the PBR? Flying from dawn to dusk?
Nope. Alcoholic beverage is never free in the Carolinas.
They're probably dollar beers.
Yeah, cool. Okay, now we're going to look forward to racing action this weekend. Quite a bit of motorsports happening. MotoGP, they will be in action at Le Mans. Jorge Lorenzo, I believe, is leading the championship. And fellow Spaniard Danny Pedrosa will become the youngest rider at the age of 24 years and 236 days to start in 150 Grand Prix. And this includes 250, 350 and all the MotoGP. And interestingly, all 150 will be with Honda. You know, they say that you meet the nicest people on a Honda.
I heard about that.
He could be a nice guy. Honda just may like him. American Le Mans Series, they are at Laguna Seca, right here in our backyard, and Moa will be there. And I've already made contact with Yuncos Racing of Florida, and their drivers are Connor Daly, Bambino of Derek Daly. And they also have a lady by the name of Tatiana Calderon from Colombia. So I'm going to go and interview them and hopefully some other people. And I'm going to ask her if Monty has ever... The team is based in Florida. I'm sure she's also based there. I'm going to ask her if Monty has ever invited her for cheeseburgers and Slurpee. You never know. Formula 2 and World Touring Car Championship, they race together. They will be racing in the park at Monza. I'm sure you've heard of that place.
Vaguely.
Yeah. F3 Euro Series, along with this main event, DTM, which is the German Touring Car Championship, in action at the Ricardo Torno Circuit in Valencia, España, and FIA GT in Brno, Czech Republic. So if anybody wants to see Romain Grosjean in action, please head over to Brno, which is a very nice track. I like this very much, in Czech Republic. And finally, this really caught my attention. The World of Outlaws are in action at the Attica Raceway Park for the Breakout 500. The name is a joke, but they are racing at the Attica Raceway Park.
I understand. I'm sure there's a Breakout 500 somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's pretty much wraps it up. I'll take it.
Outstanding.
And when we come back after our commercial break, we're going to have an interview with
Alexander Rossi, winner of the Barcelona GP3 race.
Yes, very impressive.
Dominated, actually.
Yeah, oh yeah, led from start to finish. And I was an eyewitness.
So, outstanding. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
And for one of my favorite goodie bags, a moment in Monaco Grand Prix history, Nasser.
Yes, sir. This is, you know, very interesting race, and so I sat down and collected some data, which I think is interesting.
Just off the top of your head?
No, I'm, you know, not that good, but I need to do some research and fact check. But a lot of stuff I already know, but, you know, fact checking is very...
We know that you know.
Yeah, but we have to fact check. Sometimes memory fails me. It's the old age, Charlie. So anyway, Monaco Grand Prix has been on the calendar since the start of the championship in 1950. There was no Grand Prix in the Principality in 1951, 53, and 54. However, there was a race in 1952 called Monaco Grand Prix, but this was a non-championship race for sports cars. And that's why you have to do fact check. So when I was looking at the name, I says, no, this guy never won a Formula One race. And then I saw the, you know, the disclaimer, this was a non-championship sports car race. Interestingly, it's the only original Grand Prix on the calendar where the venue has never changed. It really cannot change. Where will they go? Nice. So we'll look at some of the famous races, historical. We'll start with the very first one, 1950. Fangio's first win in an Alfa Romeo. Alberto Ascari's second place finish was first podium and points finish for Ferrari in Formula One. And this was, by the way, round two in the 1950 World Championship, and Ferrari did not attend the very first race, the British Grand Prix, European Grand Prix, I believe, as it was called. Harry Schell was the only American in the race and was out on the opening lap after a collision. Several cars were involved, and he was one of them. 1955, Maurice Trintignant becomes the first French driver to win an F1 race, driving a Ferrari. This was also the first Grand Prix win for Engelbert tires. And that's what I like when you're looking at old pictures, Engelbert or Dunlop. Race is best remembered for Alberto Ascari going in the water in his Lancia. Once again, Harry Schell was the only American in the race, retiring on lap 68 when his engine was done blowed up. 1957. Fangio was the winner in his Maserati, and America had its first podium in F1 when Maston Gregory finished third in his F1 debut driving a Maserati. And just for a legal disclaimer, when I say America had its first podium in F1, meaning in Formula One Grand Prix race, because in those days the Indy 500, you know, 51, 52. So just a clarification. This is very interesting, Mr. Rogers. 1958, Maurice Trintignant scored his final Grand Prix win and gives Dunlop tires their maiden win in F1. F1 debut for Team Lotus with Graham Hill and Cliff Ellison, who finished sixth. You know what is interesting about this? Some years ago when I was doing one of my calendars for the series was Lost Tracks. There was a picture of Francois Sivet at Montjuic Park in Barcelona, street track. And I could not believe when I read that... When Francois Sivet won the U.S. Grand Prix in 1971, it was the first time a French driver had won a Grand Prix since the 1958 Monaco Grand Prix. Quite a big gap, you know.
You're busy
with what? Making,
No, that we had a problem with one of our neighbors invading, and then we had to rebuild the country.
Oh.
It took a lot of time.
Okay. No comment. Okay, 1960. Sterling Moss in Rob Walker racing entry gives Lotus first success in Formula One. Phil Hill was third in this race in a Ferrari. 1961, very impressive performance here. Moss keeps the Sharks at bay. One of the greatest wins in F1 history as Stirling Moss in a privately entered Lotus holds off three short-nosed Ferraris to win again in Monte Carlo. Look at this, man. Three Americans in the top five. Richie Ginther second, Phil Hill third, and Dan Gurney, all from Southern California, fifth in his Porsche. So in the 60s, early 60s, we have three Americans in the top five. In this day and age of instant communication, instant transportation, instant pudding, we have guys, they're waiting for Luca Montezemolo to call them. They'll be waiting for a long time. Anyway, 1965, Peter Revson wins the F3 support race. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the only time an American driver has won any kind of race in Monaco. I may have to do a little bit more research on it, but I don't recall any other American winning the F3 race or the World Series by Renault or a GP2 or a Formula One race.
Not even Mario.
But I'm hoping that Alexander Rossi will change all this, which will be very good. 1967, Italian Ferrari driver Lorenzo Bandini crashed on lap 81 while chasing Denny Hulme for the lead. His Ferrari turned upside down and caught fire with fatal injuries to the driver, and Denny Hulme went on to win his first Grand Prix. And of course, you know, this award that is given every year for the best sportsmanship, Lorenzo Bandini is of course named after him. And some years ago, Robert Kubica got that award. 1969, first pole position for Jackie Stewart and final Grand Prix start for Cooper. Race was won by Graham Hill, his fifth and final win, giving him the nickname Mr. Monaco. 1970, Jochen Rindt got a surprise and a win courtesy of Black Jack. And this is available along with most of these on YouTube. A pretty interesting race here. 1971, Jackie Stewart wins this race in the streets of Monte Carlo with only the front brakes on his March Tyrrell or whatever it was. That's a pretty impressive performance.
Especially when we've got people this season that were just showing some heat in their brakes and getting all freaked out.
Yeah. 1972, first and only Grand Prix win for Jean-Pierre Beltoise and the final win for BRM. 1978, after a long, long wait, Patrick Depailler, who came from Clermont-Ferrand, finally wins his first race in a Tyrrell. 1979, Jody Scheckter, and in 1981, Gilles Villeneuve wins for Ferrari, and Eddie Cheever was fifth in a Tyrrell. 1982, this is one of the most famous Monaco races. Patrese wins a race that nobody wanted to win. Do you remember this race where Pironi stopped in the tunnel? I think he ran out of petrol. Derek Daly had a chance to win. And then Patrese, who took the lead, he spun on one of the corners, but then, you know, I think they pushed him and he rolled downhill and restarted his... He did not even know he had won the race. And 1984, of course, is when Ayrton Senna made his mark in the world of Formula One in the rain, heavy rain, closing a 25-second gap to Alain Prost. And race was stopped by Jackie Yeager's controversial decision, some say, but who knows what happened. But this race really set Ayrton Senna's name on the mark. 1992, Mansell was on his way to win a race that he really wanted to win, as he told me. Then he had him and his tire problems, you know, had to go in and chase Senna very hard all over, couldn't pass him. And then, like he said, you know, if it was happening today, they would have black flagged Senna because he was moving all over the track. But it was, I remember Ayrton Senna's interview after the race in 1992 that he said he was having wheel spin in third gear, trying so hard. But very impressive, and the commentary is very good too. And of course, then we come to the tangle in the tunnel in 2004, where Schumacher and Montoya collided. Two of all the people, these two, why am I not surprised? And truly wins his first and only race so far. And that's a brief history of the Monaco Grand Prix.
Absolutely outstanding facts and trivia.
Thank you, sir.
For everyone to relish. Okay, why don't you go ahead and introduce this up-and-coming young driver, American driver, that may one day be in Formula One and win the Grand Prix de Monaco.
Well, winning is the name of the game of this business. And young driver, or as you would call, whippersnapper. That's what the word you use, right?
Occasionally I do use the word whippersnapper.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Alexander Rossi, young man from Nevada City in Northern California, inherited love for motor racing from his dad, Peter. He was quick and successful in karting and won the Formula BMW US Series in dominating fashion in 2008, with 10 wins, and won the prestigious World Finals in Mexico City, which was very, very impressive. Last year, he was Rookie of the Year in Formula Master in Europe and also took part in the 2009-2010 GP2 Asia Series. Very quick and very aggressive. This year, he is competing in the new GP3 Series with Nicola Todd's ART team and was one of the two winners in the opening round at the Spanish Grand Prix weekend. Alexander is heading for a great future, and we are pleased to be reporting on his progress since 2007. My thanks to Alexander and his parents for their time and cooperation.
Thank you, Nass.
And we will also have a brief conversation with his mom, Dawn, and she was there to see the son win, which, you know, is very, very good, and I was very pleased to meet her for the first time. So I hope our listeners enjoy a conversation with Dawn Rossi also.
Fantastic.
Okay, folks, in Barcelona with Alexander Rossi of Nevada City, California, US of A. Alexander, because of you, the American flag was waving, national anthem was playing, congratulations. What does this victory mean to you?
Yes, thank you. You know, obviously it's fantastic to win in an F1 event, and in a support series for GP2, it's even better. However, the weekend started off quite difficult. I made a mistake in qualifying and had to start at the back of the grid for yesterday's race. And, you know, the goal there was to finish 8th so that we can start on pole for today's race, and we were able to do that. And we knew that because the passing is quite difficult in these cars, that if we got a good start and were able to maintain the lead into turn 1, that our chances of winning were quite good. So, you know, it was a good save for the weekend, but I don't want to have to go through it again. It was a lot of pressure yesterday for the race to get up into 8th place. So hopefully we can have smoother qualifying and, you know, start at the front where we need to be.
Okay. So the mistake turned out to be a blessing in disguise. What was the mistake, and was it a conspiracy to finish 8th so you can get the pole on the reverse grid?
You know, the mistake was it was wet, and we had a dry setup on the car, and we were waiting for the track to come to us. And really, I was just driving around, you know, waiting for the track to dry out. And in the final corner, I upshifted in the middle of the corner, made a mistake, and just lost it. And conspiracy, no. I went for 7th, actually, because I wanted the 2 points versus 1 point, and just couldn't get it done. But we took the 8th place, and that was quite good.
You had a tremendous charge. You passed half the field on the first lap. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, unfortunately, every GP2 Asia race I did, or most every GP2 Asia race I did, I had to start from the rear of the grid. So I learned quite a bit of how to do it. And on top of that, I was very fortunate in a couple situations to avoid some cars that were spinning across the track. But it was just about finding the holes, keeping the nose clean, and it worked out okay.
You mentioned that passing cars is hard. What is the reason?
You know, it just seems that there's so much downforce in this car, and it relies on downforce a lot more than it does ground effects. And that's just really the main problem. Whereas GP2, they rely heavily on ground effects, and downforce is not so important. So when you're behind another car, it's quite easy to follow.
And next weekend, will you please tell our listeners where you're racing next weekend?
Racing in Monaco in the World Series by Renault Race. And it's a way for me to learn the track for next year. Obviously, you can't test there, so it's going to be a pretty amazing experience, and I can't wait.
And talking of GP2 Asia, where you race, and I saw some of your races on TV and the web, a very, very aggressive driving there, and how much did you enjoy it?
GP2 Asia
we were talking about.
Some of the races were quite fun. Like I said before, I had to start from the back more often than not because of, you know, we got a disqualification, we had a penalty, and so yeah, it was just an unfortunate qualifying series. But that also gave me the opportunity to improve my racecraft, and you know, we went forward a lot. And there was some aggressive racing, yeah, for sure, but in GP2 you have to do it. And especially at GP2, you know, towards the front. I mean, everyone is fighting for the win, even if you're in sixth place. I mean, so it's always, you're going for it. So carrying that over to GP3, I mean, I learned quite a bit. The restart today, I did exactly what David Valsecchi had done all year in GP2 Asia during the restarts, and I took that and I was able to apply it today, and it worked quite well.
Okay, you're with ART team.
you guys pretty much dominated the preseason testing. You have numbers 1 and 2, 3, and you are number 1, which is great. Was it a surprise when Paul Warthog won the race yesterday?
Yes and no. I mean, he did a very good job in qualifying, a lot better than we did. And they called it very well, and they deserved the win. But I was quite surprised to see him hold on to the race win, simply because they haven't had the pace. But it seems that, you know, whoever leads the first lap is going to normally win the race if they don't make a mistake, just because it is so difficult to pass. So, I mean, qualifying is going to be very crucial in this championship. Obviously, some tracks will land more passing opportunities, Spa, Monza, Turkey, because there's such long straights. But certainly on a track like this, it was very difficult.
You raced last year in Formula Master after two races in this series now today, this weekend. How would you size up the competition in GP3 versus Formula Masters?
You know, GP3 is probably the same level of competition. Just the difference is there's more guys in GP3 that are capable of it. It's a bigger field. But Formula Master, the talent level is right there. I mean, Fabio Limer was champion, and you know he's currently leading the GP2 race. So, I mean,
as we speak.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the level in Formula Master was quite high. Unfortunately, the grid was just quite small.
Well, it was great to meet your mom, and I had her give a message to our listeners. You know, we have a lot of American fans waiting for an American success in Formula One. Step one was today with the victory. A message for them, please.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm coming over here as an American, and it's very rare. I think there's three of us right now. And, you know, the goal is to get to Formula One. It's a long road, but one step at a time. And right now, I think we're in quite a good position. So hopefully we can improve our qualifying efforts and focus on more race wins.
Okay. All the best, young man.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here in Barcelona with Don Rossi, mother of Alexander Rossi. Don, must be great feeling to see the American flag and hear the national anthem, your son winning the GP3 race.
It was a wonderful feeling indeed. Alexander had some difficulties this weekend, and he managed to keep really positive thoughts and focus on each step of what he needed to do throughout the first race, advancing to eighth position, and then into this race, getting a good start, keeping his head down, and I was so proud of him. It was the best Mother's Day gift I could ever get, and to be able to hear the American flag, hear our national anthem, it means so much to me because Alexander's worked so hard and sacrificed so much in order to come to Europe and to race here, and it's just something special to be able to witness that.
And I know the sacrifices, and I'm sure you and your husband Peter have really made a lot of sacrifices to get here. What does this mean, a victory mean to you and for his career down the road?
Well, the victory is an important step in a very long season, and it's important to enjoy it while we're here, but then to start focusing on the races ahead, to realize that it's a highly competitive series, that he's going to need to work extremely hard at each event that follows, and to put forth, you know, the same amount of effort and dedication he has in each series that have come before this in order to put his best performance possible, because this is going to be a very tight championship, and obviously his goal is to win it, and it would be very important for him to finish very well. Obviously, winning the championship is the goal, and that's important for his plans for next year.
As you know, American racing fans are desperately seeking a talented American driver in Europe. Would you like to say a message to our listeners? We have a lot of fans who are passionately following your son's career.
I would love to send a message to all of the fans at home, and that would be that their support means so much. It's very hard for us being away from home. You know, now living in Europe, Alexander experiences sometimes pangs of homesickness where he doesn't feel connected to the fans in America, and he sees that there's kind of a chasm between him being here and other American drivers who seem like they have more support maybe from the American fan base than he does, and he wants the American fans to know that he's here wanting to bring America to Europe. He wants to be an ambassador for America in the European field, and so any time that he could get, you know, messages on his website or indications from the fans that they're supporting him, it means so much to him.
Thank you very much.
Alexander and Don, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
But wait, there's more. We also have a brief conversation with G. Paul Booth, CEO of Performance Drink. They are based out of Las Vegas, Nevada, and he was in Barcelona to sign up new drivers, and they are making a big push in football, also known as soccer, in the European market. So thank you, Mr. G. Paul Booth of Performance Drink.
Alexander, I see a sticker on your helmet, Performance Drink. What is this thing, and how long have you been drinking it?
Performance drink is just exactly what the title is. It's a drink that I take before I get in the car each session, and it's a way to raise blood sugar without spiking it and just giving you energy to maintain. And I've been taking it since 2006.
Is it working out good for you?
Yeah, it's quite good. I'm very happy to be using it, and it was quite nice to have the owner of the company here this weekend. It's the first time he's seen me race in 3 years, so it was good for all of us here.
Thank you very much. Okay, folks, I'm here in Barcelona with Mr. G. Paul Booth from the USFA. Paul, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Fantastic. And yourself?
Very good, thank you, and I appreciate your time. Performance Drink, tell us a little bit about your company and what are you doing here?
Well, the company is moving into Europe on a high scale because of the fact that it's a performance drink. It's not a sport drink, it's not an energy drink, it's not a thirst quencher. It actually enhances performance. Keywords, performance drink. So we've worked with many of the top race car drivers in the U.S. and in Champ Car with Sebastian Bourdais for 5 years. Many of the other drivers from Daytona, such as DP drivers.
And company is based out of Las Vegas?
Company is based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. We've been established for over 10 years. But many people don't understand who we are because most of the competition won't tell anyone after they find out what we do.
Okay, in terms of competition, why would a driver go with Performance Drink and not with one of your competitors? And I won't name your competitors, okay?
We don't have any competitors. Most of the other drinks don't even claim to do anything, let alone support in any way, shape, or form. In fact, most of them are a detriment. The sport drink, energy drink, thirst quencher, we're a performance drink. We enhance performance. The minimum increase is 10 to 40%. No one gets less than the 10 at this high-end level because we're also in the NBA, the NFL, the NHL. It's major. We don't really have any competition in this category. The drink starts at $100 per single serving and goes up. We work with the PGA. It goes as high as $3,000 per drink. We come to win, and we win.
So for guys who have big bellies like me, what's the difference between your drink, performance drink, and let's say Red Bull?
Without naming any particular drink, instead of increasing the heart rate, we decrease the heart rate under the same load. The core temperature is usually 2 degrees lower. The heart rate is anywhere between 5 and 15 beats a minute less doing the same workload. Lactic acid is delayed 20%. The wattage is up 48% power cellular level. Everything is done in blood work. It's not maybe, it absolutely does it.
So there must have been a lot of research and science done on this before you guys put this thing out on the market. Can you tell us a little bit about the background before it was launched?
Well, we launched actually at the high end in 1996, published in the International Journal of Sport and Nutrition. We just got republished again in another level for cognitive focused mental awareness, which if you don't have in sports, you may as well go home. We also show that that was done in the American Journal of Sport and Nutrition. So we're really good to go. Done a lot of research. Everything, as I said, we come from the top end, and the mass market formula will be out shortly so that we can address those issues. Of course, it won't be the same drink as you get driving a race car, pulling 3 G's at 120 degrees to 175 degrees.
And on the European racing scene, what different series are you involved in? And I'm very pleased to hear that you're also involved with very talented American Alexander Rossi. Tell us about your association with drivers in Europe, please.
Well, we came into the series in Silverstone last week, and we're now working with several of the drivers in factory Nissan and factory BMW, as we were in America. So it's really and Alexander's been with us for 5 years, but some of the other individuals you may know of, Sebastian Bourdais, Bruno Genchera, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Kenny Breck, just to name a few, all participate in our program or have at one time.
Okay. How about a message for our listeners? And we have listeners all over the world.
If you're not using performance drink, you're already one step behind.
Okay, thank you so much and have a good day.
And now, before we go to the wrap-up, I want you to remind our listeners about a special Saturday edition podcast with a very interesting interview.
Yes, sir. You know, we have about close to 30 interviews from this trip. And so we're trying to bring as many as possible to our listeners as soon as possible. So this Saturday special edition will feature an interview with Mr. Richard Dutton of Fortec Motorsport, a British-based, very successful team. And they have cars in 5 different cities this season. So I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation, in-depth conversation with Mr. Richard Dutton. And two of his drivers include, past drivers include Heikki Kovalainen and his favorite, and our favorite too, Juan Pablo Montoya.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that. That'll be podcast 428, our weekend special. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
This week, forum updates brought to you by Mark Farrington.
Dr. Mark Farrington.
Dr. Mark. There continues to be lively action on the forum, with post-Monaco discussions running on some predictable topics. For example, there are general condemnation of Michael Schumacher's penalty, even from McLaren supporters. And do we see the distant hand of Damon Hill in here? There's lots of debate in the team's reliability thread discussing how this should be measured. Tricky Dick had posted one view, with Ferrari, Red Bull, and McLaren being 1, 2, and 3. Others complain that this only considered finishes, whereas lots of Red Bulls have limped home and Ferrari engines have been going kablamo in several species of car. Some people thought we should distinguish between team stupidity and mechanical unreliability, while others thought these were really the same thing. NASA's goodie bag of interviews and news from Barcelona met with universal approval, and everyone's looking forward to hearing the results. The latest rumors on the forum linked Mark Webber with Ferrari next year, but most forum members were very skeptical, mainly about the downside of him having to swap the fine restaurants of Milton Keynes for the Cavallino restaurants in Maranello. There have been resurrections of the personalized number plates, and anyone here own a Porsche? Threads. And it has emerged that at least 3 forum members own Miata MX-5s and 3 others Ferrari 308s. The most exciting news of the week was that Ye has been spotted posting on the Jensen forum of the Team McLaren Supporters Club. And the most surprising, that Tricky has decided to boost the numbers of the Miata MX-5 owners to 5 and has placed an order for a brand new little number in red. That's all, folks.
Thanks, you,
Dr. Mark.
Absolutely outstanding. The forum is always fun. Check it out. You know you want to. Quickly, Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, just go to CameronKarting.com. I also want to remind you that Audible.com is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audiblepodcast.com/F1Weekly. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/F1Weekly for your free audiobook. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the broadcast. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.